Chapter 32. Virginia. Parley. Lysander parallels my walk across the metal wasteland. To my right, the lights of Starscraper sparkle with promise on the southern horizon. The northern horizon is bleaker, a mountain range of utilitarian mesas strewn with artillery obelisks, shattered like trees by lightning. For 2 weeks, war has raged over most of the moon. I hardly recognize it. As our armies grind against one another, the commanders have snuck away for this secret meeting. I clump forward. My welder boots are magnetic and heavy, clumsy, as stipulated. With honor all but dead, the demands from both parties for the meeting were extensive and fraught with suspicion. But in the end, it comes down to trust. Trust that neither of us wants to die, and trust that we both have more to gain from an adversary with some modicum of social comportment. A couple hundred steps from our airlocks brings Lysander and I together under the shadow of a crashed warship. The young loon is more physically intimidating than I expected. Gone is the little boy from Octavia's garden, the one who used to lose to me at chess over and over again, never tiring of it. He is taller than I am by a head and a half now. His pulse armor, riddled with field patches and pressure seals, is that of a man who's faced weeks of corridor fighting and emerged with a reputation for luck and leading from the front. His face is a mirror of mine, haggard from strain and sleeplessness. This is not a spoiled, entitled princeling. This is the last of Silenius's blood, a man who has come to see if he, too, can conquer. Lysander and I fall back on tradition. He touches his heart with an open palm and extends it to me. I repeat the gesture and set my palm on his. His is larger. We draw back and he extends an analog audio cord. The accent of the Palatine fills my helmet.
"Sheathed is my blade, held fast by my word," he says.
"True are my words, secured by my name," I reply.
"Salve, Augustus."
"Salve, loon." He smiles, somehow still a little shy, or perhaps playing at it to set me at ease.
How many of our ancestors have said thus to each other, do you think?
"The formal rites of parley," he asks. "On the field of battle, formally, 4, all told."
"Not 5?
You're counting Oceanus and Agrippa."
He frowns. "I shouldn't."
"No. Oceanus may have been a chip off Silenius's block, but Agrippa was adopted into my house after the genetic accords. He had as much Augustan blood in his veins as you do, which is a little over 1.9%, actually." He smiles.
"You always did know your history."
"You, on the other hand, seem to have embraced theatricality. I remember a more bookish boy, a more prudent boy. You've learned to gamble on shock."
"I have. Your husband is a stern teacher."
Lysander's face is not classically handsome as Cassius's or Apollonius's. Instead, his is a lean hunting dog ideal, like Roke's face, but intense instead of romantic. And it is a face no longer burned. According to our intelligence, it was fixed just before his speech at the Colosseum, right before his true debut. He's replaced the scar with marks of sorrow. Ajax was close to him. "I doubt you had Darrow's full attention. You must wonder what will happen when you do. Will you measure up?" Lysander meets my tone.
"I am here, above this planet, talking to his wife. Where is he?"
"Oh, he'll turn up when it's most inconvenient for you, I'm sure."
"I'm sure. He'll be wanting this back."
He turns bodily so that I can see the two razors sheathed on the outside of his left thigh armor. One is familiar. When I gave Darrow his razor after the Institute, I had no idea what a symbol it would become. He was mocked for its curve by Tactus and his fellow lancers. They were too embarrassed to fence with him. Lorne wasn't. 12 years later, every child knows its shape. Now Lysander pats the hilt. The gesture makes no sound in the vacuum.
I did have his full attention, Virginia, for a moment, in a dark street. He was tired, wounded, but so was I. I broke his sword, probably his arm, and put my razor through his chest. Then he fled and left his sword behind. It was not cowardice to run, he'd simply been outmanoeuvred, just as you are now.
I nod to the statue of Darrow to the north. Have you seen it up close yet?
Not yet, he says. But by week's end we'll have pushed you off the pole and I can get a closer look.
Pay special attention to what's in his hands. It just looks like a sphere from far away. It's not, at least in its details. It's hundreds of manticores, hydra, skulls, hammers, eagles, a few Poseidons, mermaids, centaurs and crescents he has taken from the prows of gold warships. No room to include any from ships smaller than a destroyer class. You understand? That is consistency against intense competition, Lysander. For 12 years now. One battle does not make you a lord of war.
I have Darrow's blade. I have Darrow's warship. Now I have more than a third of your moon. I also have 70,000 of your best troops encircled in Sector 3. Your men are exhausted. We have legions that haven't even landed yet. By the end of the week, half your army will be cut off and herded toward the Hollows, where we will kill them.
Fine. By the balls, then, I say.
I beg your pardon.
You don't have me by the throat, you have me by the balls. You can wrench and twist, and it will cause me terrible agony, but in the end they are just balls, and I am a woman, so I will go on, enduring without my balls, and I will pester you with death by a billion cuts. Except it won't be me. I am not a captain who goes down with his ship. I am a sovereign who will delegate to people more suited for tunnels and darkness and the horrors that happen there.
Pegasus' legion is at less than half strength. You'd waste them here.
No. Rat legion. I believe even you know them. By his expression, I see their reputation does precede them.
They were on Mercury, he says.
Sure, sure, but you know how legions work. Like snakes shedding skin. What we're left with is the old skin between theatres. The tough skin. The veterans who earned their discharge. Ones that went toe-to-toe with Atlas. You know, our worst, because they learned from the enemy. Odd, their centurions petitioned me personally to come up here. Something about you impaling their brothers and sisters from Heliopolis to Tyche. He sighs.
That was Atlas.
Poor man gets blamed for everything.
You judge my name, not me.
Yes. How unfair to prejudge a man based on something he can't control. I smile. What reflection of you shall I judge, then? Your company? Your politics? Your deeds? Gears move behind his eyes as he squints at me.
Bluff. All omens, no figures. You may have snuck in Rat Legion, but if you try to bring real numbers, Helios and Dido will eviscerate them as they come up the Gravwell. We are invested in Phobos. We will take it.
Yes, because you have to take it. Atalantia waits, licking her lips for you.
You could drag it out for months, but we both know where the battle for Mars will be won. On the ground, in the tunnels. All this is blood down the drain. Yours, mine, all while Atalantia grows stronger.
Oddly enough, that is my problem as much as it is his.
Yes, I say. I've seen footage of your address to the 200 by now. I knew things were not perfect between you and your fiancée, but I must admit I hadn't counted on you openly rebelling against her.
Can you blame me? He asks. Not one bit.
Truly, I thought it was an expertly navigated and well-said bit of discourse. He smiles at that, the genuine compliment being received in kind.
Virginia,
I've known you almost my entire life. You've taught me some of my most cherished lessons, chief among them that we as a people need a language other than violence, or this war will never end. In many ways, you and I are more alike than anyone else in this struggle.
We were both raised in the shadows of tyrants and expected to be the same.
But you are not Nero any more than I am Octavia. You proved it by sparing my life all those years ago. Allow me to prove it now. At last, a hint of light.
How?
A solution to this quagmire. If you agree to quit Phobos with all your legions, I will guarantee safe passage to the planet.
Including those encircled?
Yes. It actually is generous.
In return,
you will agree to neither sabotage nor scuttle the Julii Sun shipyards. You will leave behind no saboteurs or assassins. You will, where possible, disarm your booby traps and turn over the codes to the defense systems to me.
That seems generous of me, I say.
It's not. You will suffer a blow to your reputation, as well as lose your seat in orbit and your ability to make ships. But that is already lost. With this, you stop the bleeding and your republic will live to fight another day.
Is that all I get? I ask.
The taking of Mars is a complex puzzle of which Phobos is only one piece. Any mistake on my part and my host will fracture or disappear into the red soil below. I will have the docks, but no fresh helium. Our stores are as low as you seem to think they are.
I smile at that.
I will have the moon, but a host of allies eager for their cut, and I spent all my ships.
Except one. I notice you're putting part of the dockyards to use on the Lightbringer. I don't think I've ever seen someone doing naval repairs during a battle before. He does not reply.
To whom will you bequeath the moon?
He looks uncomfortable.
Come now, you won't keep it for yourself. You look greedy.
Apollonius.
Not your chief investor?
Bellona won't like that. Of all my allies, if you could choose the loyalty of any, which would you choose? Were you me? He asks.
I consider the question. Lysandra and I do have similar ways of thinking. I would lock down the one ally my competitors would try to steal.
Let me understand, just so we're clear. I'm to aid your war effort because I find you marginally less detestable than Atalantia Algrimus, I say.
Only marginally?
I would need a little more than a vague notion of your intent against Atalantia, I say.
When I charged Phobos, I secured my reputation for valor. It was unsteady. But I lost some of that shine I had in Rome from all this. So now I need you to show I am an investment that pays off. If I do, I'll have the numbers to call a referendum to remove her dictatorial powers. Then, once her immunity is gone, I will call her to the bleeding place, and I will kill her.
I watch him carefully through the glass of his helmet. He means it. Or he's an even better liar than I am.
She's a fair blade.
So am I.
You don't have a reputation for that.
Good. If you do that without a cause for blood, it will cast you as an immature, power-hungry little man.
I have cause for blood. Atalantia killed my mother and my father, which is why I'll ask one last thing from the sovereign of the ill-fated republic as part of this merciful and honourable bargain.
What's that? I'll be needing two oracles, if you can spare them. I think of my tanks back in Aegea.
I can if you spare a Telemannus.
He considers.
For a votum?
Just what I was thinking.
He nods. I think it is important for you and me to understand. We are at war, but this war will not end until we can be civilized.
He pauses.
We recovered Ajax's body,
but I would like his head. My friends and commanders roar in outrage when I tell them the deal I've struck with Loon. Sitting with her mother, Thraxa actually turns purple with rage. Screwface shakes his head and lists the casualties we've taken. Only Holiday nods along in agreement with me. Victra says nothing. She reclines in a chair with her legs spread and a whiskey balanced on her chest. Char stands up.
We lose the docks, we lose the war. Ships are our only hope.
Of course you'd say that, Harnessa says.
Because I'm a blue.
Because you're a fighter pilot, man. Red, blue, vermilion, you all fight to the last, Harnessa says.
His eyes twinkle at me.
Are you thinking we turtle the fleet? Play at friction between Loon and Atalantia?
I smile. They're their own worst enemy. We give this to Lysander. He's a competitor. He's also our best chance of taking out Atalantia.
So we want to empower a Loon to unite the society? Char asks. That's mad.
He's weaker. He depends on alliances, on pleasing greedy tyrants who all think they're his most valuable ally, Holiday says. He can unite them because they are afraid of Atalantia. And we should be, too. She is raw power, and a realist. Loon is an idealist. When she's gone, his allies will fight to fill her vacuum. There will be division, factions, weakness. Is that not a better plan than ramming our head against a wall up here? Everyone turns and looks at the cinder block of a woman, even Victra.
What? The price these people paid for Phobos, you think they want to take on Mars? All the people that died up here just bought Mars a reprieve, unless Atalantia swoops in. So let's give her a problem, yeah?
Victra sips her whiskey.
Well, that's settled. We need to win so the Grunt can run for office.
Holiday looks embarrassed. I couldn't be prouder of her.
It all comes down to one question in the end, I say. Who will crack first, Mars or the Golds?
I bet my life on us a long time ago. Looking at the people in this room, I would do it again.
Oh, don't get emotional, Victor says. You're the sovereign. We have to do as you say.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I've agreed to not scuttle the dockyards as we depart. No one speaks, but I sense their unease.
And you will have to give Ajax's head back, Victra.
Victra grimaces.
But I was crafting a chalice for Severo.
She sighs.
Fine, but really, Virginia, the Minotaur is in my house. No word from Severo or Darrow. We've lost Phobos.
You said there was good news. I nod to Glaucus. He disappears out the door. Sophocles runs squealing from his pout in the back of the room and runs after Glaucus.
Infectious laughter booms from the hall. A moment later, Glaucus returns, pushing Kavax in a wheelchair.
Niobe and Thraxa rush him as Sophocles tries to inhale his face. Victra doesn't move, but tears well in her eyes.
Shit. I said, don't get emotional.